I feel, I think more than mistakes to avoid, I think realizing mistakes is important, because I think avoiding them, each of them necessarily teaches you something, right? About the market. It's a good feedback mechanism. I think it's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's not fatal to the company, it's okay to kind of go ahead and make them.
Hello and welcome to the Startup Operator Podcast, where we source wisdom from India's best founders, operators, and investors. I'm Roshan Karyappa, and I'm speaking with Rashid Khan, the co-founder and chief product officer at Yellow. Yellow is one of the most successful SaaS startups around, having raised over $100 million in funding and is at the cutting edge of conversational AI. Rashid joined Yellow right out of college, and in this conversation, he traces the journey of going from a nice-to-have to a need-to-have, a building for consumer versus building for the enterprise, and engineering the product for North Star metrics like goal completion rates and NPS. This was a fascinating conversation, a lot of insights on SaaS and product building. So let's dive into this episode of the Startup Operator Podcast with Rashid Khan. Hey, Rashid, welcome to the Startup Operator Podcast. Thank you so much for making the time.
Hey, Roshan, nice being on the podcast here. After listening for so many episodes, it's finally good to be on this.
Awesome. So I think the first thing I want to start off with is what was that insight that led to founding Yellow, right? Because I mean, conversational AI, conversational marketing, etc. I mean, these are common terms that we hear about today, yeah. But it wasn't really as common when you started out, right? So what was that aha moment, and how do you go from, you know, idea to product to company with Yellow?
Yeah, it's a very interesting story, and starts in 2015. At the time, I was in college. I studied in a college called NIT Warangal. I was doing my computer science engineering there, and I had always been a big fan of Paul Graham and used to read a lot of Hacker News. And one of the biggest regret I have from college life is not starting up earlier, where me and my friends, we had a lot of good ideas, but then we kind of realized that, yeah, those ideas don't matter. It's all about the execution. But anyway, this is in January 2015. It's like relatively chilly Warangal day. Warangal is like super hot throughout the...
I've been there. I've been to your campus, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So Warangal only has two seasons. It's like summer and not summer. So it was in the not summer season there. And our college, one of the things which probably our seniors and the faculty did really well was organizing these hackathons, which became like a norm. We used to have them like every month, right? And for some of these hackathons, the team which was organizing used to bring in companies to come and recruit or give their problem statements, right? You know, what they're facing. So coincidentally, this is in January 2015, Raghu and Kishore, my other co-founders, you know, they were still working at the day jobs. Raghu is my senior from college. He studied electronics engineering there, sorry. And they started this app called Yellow Messenger. They essentially wanted someone to build out their iOS app, and they came up with that problem statement to the hackathon. And you know, while I was selecting problem statements to work on, this is what came into my mind, that you know, I would go and work and build a lot of other kind of software, but I would not build any chat software. So that is what pulled me to the problem statement at that point of time. And that's when I met Raghu and Kishore for the first time. And when I started spending some more time with them, what became very apparent was some of the lessons which we learned at that time was, one, when we looked at people around us, everyone was on a messaging platform. Like WhatsApp was super huge. You know, before that, if you remember, there was a time when BlackBerry Messenger, BBM, was super active. So messaging, at least for our generation of people and probably one generation up, it has been the go-to thing to interact. And just the 2014 acquisition of WhatsApp by Facebook, it looked very apparent that, you know, businesses will want to leverage that as a channel, especially in more messaging first markets, right? So be it India, be it South America, be it Southeast Asia, be it Africa, where WhatsApp is prevalent, it was just a matter of time when it's going to happen. And before we went out and started building out this whole product and moved into conversational AI, what we wanted to do was very simple, right? We wanted to validate, are we building something which people really want? And we started off with the most simplest path, which we felt it was. We built out an Android app, and the name lends itself from Yellow Pages, right? And the concept also lends itself from there. So on the app, you essentially, it was a location-based consumer app. You could log in to it. and it would show you all the businesses around you, and you could chat with them. So if you're in Kormangla, it would essentially show you all the restaurants, you know, the retailers and everyone, and you can just start chatting with them. Right? That was the app was as simple as that. Within launching that, and then we essentially got up to 50,000 active users. We essentially realized one thing. One is people wanted to chat with businesses. It validated our hypothesis of business to consumer communication led by consumer itself, right? It's not something that businesses were bombarding to them, but it's rather consumers are starting those conversations. So it validated that hypothesis for us. And secondly, what we realized, a lot of the queries which are coming in were quite repetitive in nature. So we felt those could be automated, right? And back in 2015, early 2016, we built out one of the first bots, conversational bots in the world, where it would help you recharge your mobile phone. We built a bot which could essentially help you book your movie. So you could say, hey, I want to watch Bahubali in Kormangla tomorrow night for 8 p.m. It would understand that and it'll help you book that movie in single shot, right? So these are the first bots which we're building. And Microsoft took notice of this while we were building this. And in early 2016, we joined the Microsoft Accelerator. We're still a consumer-oriented company, four-member team, and we had built this beautiful app. And whenever there was someone coming in from the Microsoft side, or if there's some customer visits which are happening, Microsoft used to showcase our app to them, saying that, hey, this is what the future of communication is going to look like. And this is what our bots, which everyone is talking about at that point of time. So everyone used to be blown away, because that's the first time in the history where people saw the message and they got an automatic response back, and they were able to continue that conversation, right? So it started off from there. We're still very consumer focused. We're trying to grow our audience. We're still trying to figure out the monetization model there. And that's when we kind of realized, building a consumer company is like really, really difficult. The customer acquisition is super hard. And at the same time, Microsoft said, hey, you know what? What you guys have built is really cool. And let us take you to some of our enterprise customers and see if they would like to leverage the technology which you have built, right? And that became the foray of transitioning from a B2C company to a B2B company. So Microsoft got us our first early customers, first one in the oil industry, second one in an FMCG, one of the largest FMCG groups in India. They went ahead and pitched us there. And Microsoft gave that kind of guarantee, saying that, these folks are backed by Microsoft Ventures. They're already live on Azure. They have cleared the security clearances and all of those things. So the enterprise were ready to kind of trust us and give us a small proof of concept. So up until that point of time, we were losing money every month on the app, probably like 1.5-2 lakh rupees. And then we get our first check from this large company for 6 lakh rupees. And then we get another check for 15 lakh rupees. So that's the first time we essentially saw money coming into our accounts rather than going out. And then it kind of became very apparent in mid-2016, toward end 2016, that, hey, you know what, we need to pivot and close down the consumer app which we had built, take those insights and start building out a more mature B2B platform, right? And that's where we started off, where Microsoft became one of the largest partners for us, where they started bringing in all these large enterprise customers and telling them, hey, this is, these folks can help you build bots, can help you automate, right? And they're still with a very lean team. So we're like 10-member, 15-member team. We reached like $1 million ARR with that, I think by end of 2017. And what we also validated was the kind of platform which we need to build. And over the course of last 3.5-4 years, while we've been in the business, in the B2B domain, a lot of our understanding also has kept on changing. So it initially started off as a more developer focused platform where you had to write code to build your bot out. From there on, we have transitioned to a completely no code conversational platform where you can do a lot of these automations without ever writing a single line of code.
Right.
Been a pretty long journey in that sense of a lot of insights and a lot of iterations, right? I think with the B2B platform itself, we're probably on the third version of our platform. And there have been big monumental shifts when we do a version change. Because there's a different philosophy of what the platform can do. And as I said, moving from a code-based motion to a complete no-code-based motion was a big shift in how we saw the industry kind of move towards.
Right. More than a couple of things that I'd like to pick up on, right? Talk to us about this whole shift in mindset between consumers to enterprise, right? You saw the money and then I think you did the natural thing to, look at enterprises. But what are those things that you had to realign in your business to sort of serve that opportunity?
Yeah. So I think we as consumers, right? I think one thing which is very common across all of us is, if I ask you a question, Roshan, have you had a bad experience with an enterprise? Most likely the answer will come yes. you know, when I tried contacting them for doing X, right? And it could be, X could be with an airlines industry, it could be with our telcos, it could be even with governments, right? So we all have our horror stories of how bad the customer experience has been. And if I flip that question and ask you, Roshan, have you had a good experience with any enterprises when you're trying to do something with them? The answer is most likely going to be no. So this is one part of the problem from a consumer's point of view. And when you start looking at this from a business point of view, from an enterprise point of view, there's this whole report which IBM publishes every year, which talks about how much collectively the money is spent on enhancing the customer experience and enabling customer support, right? So just last year, when we were looking at the report, that number stood at $1.4 trillion, right? So that's the amount of money is being spent today to make sure consumers like you and I get a good or a better customer support. But that's not happening, right? And when we started looking deeper into the problem, we essentially wanted to understand why that is, right? And that was the green playing field for us, because that's what we essentially had to optimize on and provide that better experience. So it started with very consumer oriented approach. And we have seen the shift in end consumers, from moving when we started initially launching bots, we saw a lot of cases where, consumers coming and typing human or agent, right, to escalate to an agent directly. From there on, shifting to handling more than a billion plus automated conversations on the platform. So if you've seen that shift, because there has been a trust which is being built out for consumers, that if they interact with a bot, they most likely are going to get a response right then and there. And in most cases, they're going to get the resolution on the same conversation without having to wait for another agent to tell them, hey, this is your ticket number, and follow up after 7 days or 14 days. So I think we're seeing those shifts happening, and it's more prevalent in the Southeast Asian market, or the way we like to call them is messaging first market. So if you look at India, South America, some bits of Europe and Southeast Asia, we call them as messaging first, because it's WhatsApp dominance has kind of made people be that way.
Right. So you mentioned a few changes with the Yellow product itself since your founding, right? And, conversational AI in the time that you've been in existence itself has gone through so many different changes. I mean, today it's a red ocean market, right? I mean, you have plenty of people that are trying to do something similar. And you mentioned this transition from having to write a few lines of code to now being no code, right? So how have you evolved in this time? I mean, what have you kept optimizing for in this time?
Yeah. So for us, there are majorly two metrics which we really, really care about at the end of the day. The first metric is what we call it is a step level goal completion. What that means is if you started a conversation with one of our bots and let's say you said, hey, I want to change my flight. What is the likelihood of you completing that conversation without getting escalated to an agent? That's the first metric which we track, which is there's an acronym for it. We call it GCR, the goal completion rate. And the second metric is the customer satisfaction. So while GCR in itself is not a great metric in a silo, because you could have a lot of false positive, but that coupled with the customer satisfaction score, which you ask after a conversation, gives you a very good sense of if that conversation did actually solve something for the end consumer or not, right? So a lot of our thought process has largely been in terms of optimizing that and making sure we reach the highest level of goal completions on the platform. And a lot of these toolkits, which we have built around the product and around this whole enabling this value which we provide, is just to make that job easier, right? So the no code motion is largely to make sure enterprises can bring their citizens and developers, more of their business folks, and give them the platform to build out those conversations, build out those automations. But at the end of the day, that's the metric which we're essentially trying to improve upon. The other point of view, which we essentially have on the market, right? I think, from an outsider's perspective, it definitely looks like it's a red ocean. There's a lot of competition. What we believe, especially even right now, is it's a fairly green field market across the globe. It's because when we get to competition or when we try to win deals against competition or be in enterprise evaluation, we're just essentially looking at three or four companies at max, which is the same repeated companies that you see over and over again. While there's a lot of motion, which is there, or there's a lot of activity around this conversational AI space, we are not seeing that kind of bubble up to the enterprise customers whom we go and serve today across multiple regions. So, over the past 4 years, we started off in India, That's where majority of our sales was. And then we moved to Southeast Asia. We expanded to Middle East. You know, just 6 months back, we opened our US office. We're getting deals there. We opened a South America office, right? So across all these regions, I think the same story is kind of playing out. And even with some of the firms like Gartner who kind of track the industry, their assessment is that probably there are like 2,000 players in the market, but top worth players looking at is just 15 or 20, right? Based on the criteria which they have put together, we're one of them top on that list. So that's one view of the market which I have. The second is, the other view which I have is, essentially the market is really, really huge. And it's a growing market. It's not something which has stagnated. It has just started growing quite recently, you know, with the whole impact of COVID, you know, enterprises moving to more automation. We saw that surge, and that's going to continue, right? It's a big shift which has happened. And we believe there's like, there'll be multiple, a couple of $100 million companies built out in this space, right? Along with us, who are solving very niche problems. So, you know, enterprises have both of these. A lot of enterprises have very horizontal problems. They want a single platform which can do a lot of stuff. That's where Yellow is best suited for them. But there are also companies who are just looking for very niche solutions, right? Where a company has gone very deep into certain things. And there's a market definitely which exists for it. So we don't feel the consolidation is going to take a long time, right? And we still haven't seen that cycle happen in CRM software yet. I mean, when you look at today, Freshworks, it's a $7 billion company, one of the first SaaS companies out of India to go public. There's a big behemoth Salesforce sitting in the US at $250 billion valuation, right? And then there's still space for so many others to kind of exist in that and keep growing. I think that's what just keeps us more optimistic in that sense, because in our space, there's no company yet which has done that. And we feel we have pretty good shot at being like the Salesforce, being that behemoth in this space. But that would not mean that we capture 100% of the market. Right. That would still mean a lot of companies would exist in this space.
Right. No, it's definitely gone from a nice to have to a need to have, right? Especially post COVID. I mean, today, you know, almost every website that you go into and every business website has some kind of chat, right? So, you know, these days customers are talking to businesses on multiple platforms, right? I mean, we hear of this whole omni-channel experience, and, you know, I wonder if you can take us through some of the nuances of delivering this kind of a customer experience, right? Where people may interact via voice, via text, you know, maybe someone's interacting on the social pages, then they come onto the website and then they have an email or two, and then they'll end up talking to an agent and so on, right? So there could be a lot of dissonance if all of these are not like properly connected, right? So yeah, if you could just talk to us about some of the nuances of managing this.
Yeah. So, you know, starting with the first part of the question, which you talked about, is over the last 1.5-2 years, what you've seen is this conversational AI has moved from good to have to must have, right? And I think the biggest shift which we saw there was because of the lockdowns which were imposed by governments across the world to curb the movement of people. That kind of led to this kind of motion coming in. And businesses kind of realize if they don't have an automation strategy in place, they could get disrupted really, really fast. And especially when it comes to very core support use cases, a consumer with no resolution in 24 or 48 hours is most likely going to churn, right? No matter what kind of service you provide, there's always competition which is willing to take that up from just one bad experience, right? And so that was one part of the market which we saw where enterprise jumped on this bandwagon to kind of start automating a lot of their customer support or first level of interactions. The second aspect, which we also saw last year in India, was a lot of direct to consumer companies started popping up. People had the time and the passion to follow through of what they have been wanting to do. And more for a lot of people, that meant building out products for a lot of end consumers. And what we generally saw, you know, people putting up websites or apps, saw much slower adoption because you still have to spend so much marketing money to get people onto your website, either on Google or on Facebook. But one of the mediums which worked really well for them was essentially launching their shops on WhatsApp. So back in 2020, we launched a product called Canary to essentially just help the first-time retailers or D2C brands to come alive on WhatsApp and essentially introduce the complete shopping flow through that. So we saw like a surge of brands using that. It started off with very small set of customers, but it moved to the larger brands adopting it across the globe. So I think there was some shift which we kind of saw in that market as well, right? And that essentially moved to led to essentially having a more must-have, right? I think, you know, everyone starting this very seriously to have an automation strategy in place. And the first thing they started looking up for front-end automation was conversational AI, which could sit on top of the website, mobile app, and other social channels, right? And this is very much linked to the second piece which you talked about, which is the omni-channel piece, right? Today, for any new age brand, they're active across different platforms, right? It's not just the website or the mobile app anymore. They have to live on Twitter, they live on Facebook, and more recently, most platforms, most of these brands also live on WhatsApp, right? I think that's becoming like a big proponent in messaging first markets. Now, one of the biggest challenges which we saw was, you know, like websites and mobile apps, if you build out if you build out your customer acquisition strategy, which is siloed, this is a very common experience which we typically see. You know, you're facing an escalation with a customer support team, and you get a message from the marketing team saying that, hey, why don't you take on this offer, right? And that essentially is coming on because there's so much of data siloedness which exists within the enterprise. So to essentially help solve for this omni-channel strategy, the two things which we kept into account when designing for it. The first was being able to replicate all your automations across channels without you changing any code or without you redefining those workflows, right? So something which you built for your website should work very seamlessly on voice channels like telephony, should also work very seamlessly for channels like Instagram or WhatsApp, right? Without you changing anything from an automation perspective. And the second piece which you brought in was this whole customer data platform. And what that meant was if you as Roshan are interacting on the website and you move that conversation back to a WhatsApp or the mobile app, your whole context is carried forward, right? And you as Roshan is just a single line item in the CDP, and all your interactions, all your tickets which you have raised, all the items which you've bought gives a very singular view to the enterprise to be able to follow through on this omnichannel strategy. So I think from product standpoint, introducing both of those things has helped a lot of enterprises get that view. Right. And obviously, it's still there's a huge path to tread because we essentially are not the source of data for a lot of other systems of record, right? Especially in large enterprises. So I think that is something which we are navigating, but at least you know, we have a pathway to kind of achieving this for the larger organizations as well now.
This episode is brought to you by Moolia. You want to move fast? Sure. But without breaking things? Now that's a hard ask. The thing is, once you have some base of users and customers, you just cannot afford to risk quality. So how do the likes of Cred, Swiggy and CureFit, you know, some of India's fastest growing startups, ship at lightning pace and delight their users and customers? Simple, they're working with Moolia as a strategic quality partner. Moolia is India's most talented and passionate community of testers. They've helped prevent thousands of bugs and regression issues. So as a CTO or a product owner, if you want to reduce tech debt, especially while you scale, do check out Moolia.com. I've interviewed Moolia's founder and CEO Pradeep on the podcast earlier, and we spoke about how startups can improve quality while scaling and things to that effect. You should definitely check it out. I'll link to it in the description below. Now back to your regular programming.
So you have multiple use cases, right? I mean, on the sales side, on the service side and stuff. And in each of these, I mean, I think the workflows and everything, while, you know, customers can drive some of these themselves, right? But you also have to think through, you know, how it's going to verticalize for each of them, right? Maybe not verticalize, but at least how it's going to be customized to the last mile on some of these things. So, you know, how do you think through your use cases? And also when you build for the enterprise, it's always, a dilemma between what you want to innovate on versus what the customer is asking, right? I mean, we often hear you have to build with the customer, and it's right and wrong, right? There's no correct answer to that because after all, I mean, they're paying you, but at the same time, I mean, if you listen to everything the customer wants, it may, you know, you may end up missing the year ahead or maybe a couple of years ahead, right? So how do you balance all of these things?
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic. I think something which most enterprise companies would get into sooner than later. Because the moment you sign your first 100K customer or 500K customer, a lot of what you envision as a product might not be really aligned to what the customer is essentially looking at. So I'll address both of these problems. I think the first problem which you talked about is essentially this exists with more horizontal companies, not so much with vertical companies, right? And what I mean by that is horizontal is when you're trying to serve multiple industries,
yeah,
multiple functions at the same time. So you have horizontal companies there, and you have essentially vertical companies who are just focusing on a single segment and go with a very pinpointed solution. So what we've essentially learned over the course of building this platform, and the reason why we call it even a platform, right, and why not just a product, is majorly because of this big reason, right? Every enterprise in this world is unique in some sense, right? You know, they have their unique workflows, they have a set of applications which they use, which is very different, right? So the kind of integrations will be very different. And I think over the course of building the product out, what we have kind of realized is you need to kind of decouple your solutions to your core platform to the extent possible, right? So a lot of your solutions which you build, a lot of the end product which is going out should have a direct go-to-market motion associated with it. And that's when essentially we see it work really well. So just to give an example, today we have a yellow platform, but going and selling the yellow platform as it is super hard, right? Like if I go to a CIO of an insurance company, if I tell them very generic benefits saying that I'll help you reduce your cost, or it'll help you get you more productivity, that will not fly, right? That is not a value prop which will work. So you need to be very niche in terms of your value prop. So essentially on top of Yellow platform, we have insurance-based accelerators or vertical which you've built out, which essentially is catering to just insurance-based use cases and the value which it gives to the insurers, right? So just to give an example, collections is a big problem in banks, right? So collections as a use case is something which is built on top of Yellow. And that is something which our sellers go and pitch saying that, hey, we know that also makes sure that the kind of persona whom you're meeting in the enterprise is very pinpointed. So we're going to the collections officer and we're saying, you know what, we know collections is a big challenge for you. Our AI can help you increase your collections by 30% by doing this regular follow-ups on WhatsApp, on voice calls, right? And that essentially sits as a vertical solution on top of the broad horizontal platform which we have built. So for us, I think to get to this level of understanding is we had to decouple solutions to the core platform itself and have this verticalized strategy, which is very linked to your go-to-market. So we have go-to-market teams specifically for insurance. We have go-to-market teams specifically for voice, for WhatsApp. And that essentially has helped us kind of scale to the extent which we have done today. And one of the big things we want to do this year is largely go deeper into each of these industry verticals and build more verticalized solutions. And what I mean by that is, if you look at retail as an example, if we are just a conversational medium, if we are just a tool where you can come, if you're coming in saying, I want to buy a red shirt and gives you red shirt there. We essentially, our differentiation is very, very less, right? Because there could be a red messenger which can come up tomorrow with a better NLP, so to say, and can replace us very easily, right? So we're not building that moat out. So at the same time, we also have to go deeper into each industry vertical and solve some more problems for them. So while the segue is your customer support problem or your acquisition problem starts with that, but at the same time, you also need to solve deeper AI problems for them, which is manifested by conversational AI, which is powered by conversational AI on top. I think that is something which we've been thinking a lot about, right? Moving on to the second piece of this question is largely on roadmaps, right? And in terms of how an enterprise, it becomes so critical, especially when you're much, much younger, it becomes so critical when you sign large customers to align yourselves to what customers want. And a lot of B2B building, I think, from our experience of running this company and building this product, is one of your biggest stakeholders always will be your existing customers and your prospects, right, whom you're trying to onboard. And in a lot of B2B sales, you're just trying to sell the roadmap, right? You're trying to sell the vision of what the product could become. And in the early days, it's very hard to be very opinionated of where you're going, right? Because you also are figuring out with the customer in terms of what kind of product needs to be built out. So I think, we did this session in SaaS Bhumi where I talked about, this is a problem which I talk a lot about in general, is how to handle roadmaps, how to handle hijacking of roadmaps by customers and partners and everyone, right? And what we segmented out was the different life cycle of a company. So if you're a company which has not achieved $1 million revenue, I think you got to do what you got to do to make sure you hit that benchmark first, right? You hit that milestone first. And for that, if you have to build some custom features, which might not be generic enough, it's okay to do so, right? Because at that point of time, your main mode is to survive and get to some kind of product market fit. I think you need to start becoming opinionated about what the future would look like with respect to your industry, which you're operating in and the product which you're building, probably between $3 to $5 million of revenue. is when you start needs to forming that opinion. And there are ways to involve customers to get their concurrence in designing roadmaps at that stage, right? I think one of the things which we did was we formed this customer advisory board, CAB, where for our top customers, we created like a forum where when we were designing our roadmaps, they essentially became like a stakeholder who could help us prioritize. So, you know, we used to go to them saying that, hey, these are the problems you're thinking to solve for this next coming 3 or 4 quarters. What do you think are the most important ones for you, right? And what are you willing to pay more for, right? And that essentially helped us navigate that 3 to 5 million. I think post you hit like a $10 million revenue, you essentially are starting to look a little bit much bigger. You can essentially have opinions, which customers will respect. They seek out to you for, you know, where the market is being headed and generally follow through in terms of what kind of roadmap you're building. And this also kind of gets emphasized, and if you're working with firms like Gartner or Forrester, right, where they, if they publish you in one of the top, let's say Magic Quadrant or the Peak Report, right, as in somewhere even just on that, your opinions start mattering at that point of time, and that's when you can go and say that, hey, you know what, I feel these are things which we need to do, and this we don't need to. It starts becoming much easier to say no, but I think a lot of while we just finished our planning session last month. And now we are just in that execution mode. Having that customer input at every point of time will be needed. It's just that you have to navigate depending on the kind of to where you are in your company cycle, very, very differently. But you know, they still will be one of the biggest stakeholders, yeah, of what you build, right? And very true in the B2B enterprise.
For sure. SaaS. No, I've seen this myself as well, that, you know, I mean, you have to pace and lead basically, and you are first optimizing for the customer, then for the market, and then for the category itself. And in that journey, in the beginning, you may look to customers to figure out what next to build, right? Because, hey, I mean, you want people to pay for it. But then, I mean, customers will slowly start looking at you for, you know, what are the problems that you're addressing for the larger market itself, right? So I would say it's a very interesting journey, 1 to 10 to 50 sort of a journey. What do you have planned for the next couple of years in terms of, let's say, expansion or, you know, any kind of new products or markets or anything that you have?
Yeah, I think one of the things which we are very conscious about is not having too many variables as we scale. We are in that range right now, somewhere between 25, 30 million ARR. The plan is to kind of, you know, go as per the industry standard and kind of double it from there. Majorly, what you've tried is, I think we'll keep the product very constant across as we scale. For us, I think the scaling factor is going across regions, right? So we started off with India, we raised our Series A, then we moved into Southeast Asia, we raised our Series B, we expanded to Middle East and some bit of LATAM, we raised our Series C, we expanded into the US. Now, the whole idea is to kind of make sure each of these regions are firing really well and are getting to that scale revenue, which we project. So there's been a lot of emphasis on that. And the second thing, which I think from a long-term perspective, which we want to focus on from product side is, last year we introduced this whole voice AI, where we essentially are automating end-to-end voice calls by sitting on top of existing telephony systems. So we essentially want to double down on building a much deeper voice understanding, more, you know, much complex conversations for the enterprise and providing that value to them. Second, and then that's a multi-year problem to solve. I think it's super hard to solve it in 12 months. It's going to take like multiple iterations and working through some of the partners in the startup ecosystem to kind of help solve for it. So I think that's one piece which we see. Second, as I talked about, the whole verticalization, it's a big thing in our mind. So I think the verticalization started off by templates and started off by going deeper into each industry. Now we want to go full-fledged on it, have product managers solve more deeper industry problems and let conversational AI just be the face of the interaction, but also help do a lot of the back-end, end-to-end automation. Right? And third motion, something which we started toying around last year, was this whole product-led growth motion. So if you look at, as a company, Yellow, it's a very enterprise-focused sales motion, right? We have field sales across the globe, you know, who essentially do cold calling, get in touch with the customers, do a pitch, send a proper proposal, have a negotiation, and then they sign up with us. So it's a long process. And, you know, being at Waymo, you've seen that with several large companies, you know, how painstakingly long it is. What we feel is, I think the market is getting ready to have a more self-serve led motion. We're seeing those demands come in, especially from the early and the mid-stage startups in India. So we're working with a lot of them to help, you know, get them on board on WhatsApp, you know, for sending notifications, helping their onboarding through WhatsApp. You know, having a desk for them to essentially respond back to tickets, bringing in some bit of early automation. So I think that there we cannot have this whole sales-led motion. The startups would not work with us if we did that. If Vaimo had to talk to Yellow sales team to get something, they would not go through that, right? They probably, the product manager would want to try something out, you know, see if it works, deploy it, and then move to the next thing, right? So I think the third largest thing for us this year is going to be this whole product-led motion, especially in our industry, which is going to be one of the first ones in this segment. So let's see how that goes. I'm really excited about doing that.
Right. So, you know, I mean, the SaaS space is heating up like crazy, right? I mean, you saw a record amount of funding coming into the ecosystem last year. Of course, we saw the Epic Freshworks listing and all of that. For people listening to this podcast who want to start up in SaaS, right? What are some mistakes to avoid? What are some benchmarks to emulate? What would your advice be?
Yeah, so I think more than mistakes to avoid, I think realizing mistakes is important because I think avoiding them, each of them essentially teaches you something, right?
You fail forward, basically.
Yeah, about the market. So it's a good way to, it's a good feedback mechanism. So I think it's okay to make mistakes as long as it's not fatal to the company. It's okay to kind of go ahead and make them. I think the biggest mistake to avoid is your premature scaling, right? I think with this whole funding coming in there, it definitely comes with responsibility. It definitely comes with a lot of pressure to scale and grow fast. And in a lot of cases, when the product market fit is not established, scaling prematurely can harm than providing good to the founders and the team and everyone. It just adds a lot of pressure there. Some of the metrics which we, you know, as a SaaS founder, we should be thinking about is definitely the bookings revenue. I think it starts from there, which is your top of the funnel. Is, you know, how much top line are you bringing in? How much of the top line are you able to convert into live ARR, right? What is your rate of growth there? I think in the early stages, you should be looking at anywhere between 3.5 to 4x growth every year in this current environment. I think that multiple has changed over the course of time, but I think that's what is expected right now. You know, do definitely pay attention to your NPS and, you know, your customer love. You know, our customers really happy with you, not happy with you. You know, understand that. And as you kind of grow from upwards of $1 million ARR and achieve product market fit, I think some of the things to just think about is, you know, what is your gross margins? Are you spending a lot on certain things where you should not be? At least be cognizant about it, right? In terms of where your expenditure is coming on. Is it because you're adding salespeople? Is it because you're buying a lot of infrastructure for future scale, right? Is your support very heavy, right? So I think looking at gross margin gives you a very good sense of where the business is heading. And finally, one of the biggest important metric which we calculate is NRR, which is the net revenue retention, which essentially tells you the capacity to grow by not acquiring new customers, right? So if we stalled today and didn't acquire any customer, would we still be able to grow with our existing customers, right? So if that is pretty healthy, I think the industry benchmark is around 120 to 130%. If you're upwards of that in the early stages, around 170, 180, that means that you anyways will grow 70% year on year, even if you're not acquiring new customers, which is a great metric to get and optimize on. And this is very true for consumption-based businesses, right? This metric has to be really, really strong. I think one of the metrics, not one of the metrics, I think the broad range of metrics which I talked about. So I think there's a VC firm called OpenView Partners. They published like a very nice report on all of this. They put like very nice benchmarks in terms of, you know, Series A, Series B, Series C companies revenue-wise. So you essentially can see and benchmark yourself with your US counterparts in a similar trajectory and see where you stand, right? I think that's what I would say, Roshan. I think in terms of making mistakes, yeah, you got to make some to keep learning. Just make sure they're not fatal to the business.
As I'm listening to you, I had to check your LinkedIn again to just make sure that you graduated in 2015, right? And started Yellow right after. So, I mean, you've learned all of this pretty much on the fly at Yellow itself, right? So yeah.
I joke around with a lot of my customers and with people that this is the only thing which I know, right? This is the only thing which I know is to build a SaaS product, build a SaaS game. So I'm very passionate about it. And that also comes from a place that, you know, there was a lot of trust placed in me by Raghu and Kishore when I joined in, and I tried to live up to it because it's given a great opportunity. So I just need to make sure that you're making like a very good use of it and then being really useful, being very valuable to the company. But yeah, I think going through this journey of building any product, I think especially in SaaS, even if you don't have a lot of experience, it's okay. I feel as long as you're willing to kind of learn through it. And the Indian ecosystem has been super, super helpful, both in India and in SF, where there's people who are willing to help you out in different aspects, right? I think I remember for one of the SaaS sessions which I went to, one of the big things which we were thinking a lot about was this whole customer success. It was a new term which we had heard, where people told us, hey, you need to invest in customer success. We didn't know what it was, how to build a customer success team, or how to measure that, right? So I think attending some of those sessions in the SaaS community in India helped us, right? I think it's all, yeah, it's I think as the ecosystem, it's like amazing, which is giving opportunity to everyone and being so helpful there, right? Yeah,
no, that's one thing that I couldn't agree more on, right? I mean, which is that the ecosystem has matured so much, right? I mean, we have Indian playbooks for some of the stuff, whether it is building customer success or hiring your first engineering leader, et cetera. I mean, we have these for Indian companies, right? We have local playbooks for these, which is a sign of a maturing ecosystem. So Rashid, this has been a fantastic chat. Before we leave you, what are some books or podcasts that you would recommend?
Yeah, it's, I think the first podcast I would recommend is a Startup Operator.
That's a given, of course.
Yeah, Roshan brings in amazing folks. I think the couple of them which I like going back and listening to over and over again while I have very different interests. So I listen to a lot of philosophy. I listen to a lot of what's happening in architecture world. I think the real architecture. So I read books on that. I love design, so. I like reading books and podcast. Just listen to podcasts on it. But I think, especially in the product building space, one of my favorite podcasts is Masters of Scale. Especially the first episode with Brian Chesky, who is the founder of Airbnb. It's one of the things which people should listen to, because I think he talks about this whole 10-star experience. And that can essentially go and apply, can be applied to any product which you're building in terms of how you think about customer acquisition, how supporting your customer through it and then delighting them throughout, right? I think he talks about from a Airbnb's perspective, but I think it applies to everyone. The second one, I think one of my favorite is Naval Ravikant with Joe Rogan. I think it's a 2-hour long, 2.5-hour long podcast. Yeah. And it is just one of those things where it blows your mind away every time. A novel with Matt Moshari is also very, very nice. I think Matt's podcast around shaping up as a CEO and as a leader is really good. In one of the sessions, he talks about just letting go and then how Neville essentially figured out what he wanted to do, what he did not want to do. So I think there's like a lot of gold mine of information in those, right, from podcast perspective. I think in terms of books, while there's like a lot of books on the general startup stuff which you get, I think one of the biggest books which I learned a lot from was a book called 11 Rings by Phil Jackson. He was the ex-coach of Lakers and Bulls. And he's one of the most renowned because he has won 11 championships in NBA. So, the way he talked about mentorship and how to work with people and all of that has been amazing. And just recently I picked up this, I've been picking up a lot of books, I think the one which stands out is this book from 70s called The Inner Game of Tennis. It's by Timothy Galway. And he talks about how to train your mind to become good at something. Right. And he talks through this language of tennis, but it applies to like general life in general. Yeah, I would love to hear some recommendations from you, Roshan. What are you reading?
So Phil Jackson, I was reminded of this one. What is that? The Last Dance, right? I mean, he was amazing in that. And there was this other coach before Phil Jackson called Doug something, right? And so that guy's strategy, in all seriousness, people would ask him, so what is your strategy, right? And he would be like, give the ball to Michael and get the hell out. That is our strategy, right? Phil Jackson came in and he actually realized that there's actually a ceiling to that strategy, just letting Michael Jackson, who was, I don't know if too many people realize how big a star he was. I mean, he was the first global American star, I think, right? At least for my generation, I would say. right? But Phil Jackson was the first guy who actually put a lot more thought into, you know, managing this guy, right? I mean, not just giving him and the way he developed players in the Bulls, right? Steve Kerr and Scottie Pippen, etc. All of these people coming around, and such divergent personalities as well, right? I mean, who's the guy? Imagine managing Dennis Rodman in your team. I mean, it's like
definitely very, very bad.
And it's crazy. So
even with Lakers, you know, managing people like Kobe Bryant.
I mean, these are such big egos, right? And so what was really amazing is, and I've watched a lot of interviews after the documentary as well, which I guess everyone will do after you after you watch The Last Dance, which is phenomenal, is that everyone feels like, you know, he's their father, you know, I mean, a very fatherly figure types. I mean, literally no one was like, you know, has a bad thing to say about him, right? I mean, so yeah, his leadership is amazing. I'm going to definitely check out that book for sure. Yeah.
Any other books or podcasts which you are listening to, which you should be recommending?
So, podcasts, my top three podcasts are always How I Built This, right? I mean, so it's just phenomenal. So that guy's bloody genius, I think, the host, right? And someone that I really look up to. Of course, Tim Ferriss, for sure. And in the India scene, India ecosystem, I think there are quite a few. There's the Indian Dream, there's the Silicon Valley podcast, there's the Takeaway Club. All of these folks are like, you know, trying to talk to founders, surface some of that institutional knowledge that's in, you know, the minds of people like you, right? For everyone to like kind of consume and take insights from, right? So those would be my recommendations.
Awesome. I think the one which I missed, which I really enjoy, is this podcast called My First Million. I love the episode with
Shan VP and who's that other guy? Sampar, I think. And,
Sampar and Shan VP.
That's a good one.
I think one of the best episodes there is with Dharmesh, who's the CTO of HubSpot. So it's really, 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 really. But in general, I think stuff which you talk through is pretty, pretty amazing.
Right. And the next book on my bedside for me to read is The Almanac, Naval Ravikant's Almanac, which is like, you know, has been recommended by a bunch of people on the podcast as well. So. Awesome. Hey, this was fun. Thank you so much again for making the time, and look forward to speaking with you again.
Thanks a lot, Roshan, for hosting me on the Startup Operator, and look forward to coming again with more learnings as we scale through some of the other regions in the world, bring new products to life. So we'll definitely love to come back and talk about them.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, then don't forget to subscribe to us on your favorite platform and share this episode with all of your fellow startup operators. Also, follow the Startup Operator on LinkedIn and Twitter for more updates. Stay safe, take care, and see you soon on a brand new episode of the Startup Operator.